I want to preach for a little while on let's be clear. Let's be clear. There are times in all of your lives where you know God has taken you to another level of blessings. That occurred to me one day when I was in Sam's. I was in Sam's and my glasses consistently seemed to be scratched and seemed to be unclean. And so I saw a box of these lens cleansers. And so there was a time I would get just a little packet, because just depends what kind of change I had in my pocket. But on this particular day, I was feeling good, and Trudy had given me a financial report, and I said, shoot, I don't have to settle for little packets anymore. And I bought a whole box, about 100 of them things, and it just so happens that a day or so later, I was going to the optometrist, and when I got there to get some new glasses, I bought some lens cleansers so that I could keep my glasses clean. And the optometrist told me that those are the worst things you could ever use on your glasses. Wait a minute, it says lens cleansing wipe. We make it visible. Pre-moistened lens wipes. I just bought a whole box. I got 100 of them. He said that's the worst thing you can do to make your glasses clean. He says a lot of people don't know this, but I'll tell you what you ought to do. If you want to clean your glasses, get you some Dawn liquid detergent and take your glasses and run them under the water and then get you some Dawn cleaning, some Dawn dishwashing liquid, and dab it, put some on the lens, clean the lens and clean the frame. And Dawn has something in it, he said, that one, not only will it rinse off all the microscopic particles that you can't even see, but it has something in it that creates a sheeting action where the water will run off. And he says, you let the water run off and then just get you a towel and don't wipe or scrub, you just dab it. And if you do that, don't forget to clean the frames. If you do that, your lens will be clear. I've been doing it ever since. My wife laughs at me sometimes because I would rather go through half a day with dirty glasses till I can get to some Dawn soap, because I'm determined that I don't want to scratch them up, pay too much for them. I want to look through a clear lens. I offer that as an illustration because when Paul, after getting ran out of Thessalonica, after getting ran out of Berea, Paul is now in Athens. He's there, and as he's walking around, Paul is overwhelmed. Matter of fact, he's disturbed, because everywhere he looks, there's an idol, because he says this whole city has been engulfed in idolatry. He's troubled by it. He goes to the synagogue, and he's there sharing the word of God, and people look at him as if he's strange. They call his teaching about Jesus and the resurrection, they call that some kind of new gospel, some kind of new message. They call it foreign. And they said to him, we'd like you to come, if you will, let me paraphrase it. We want you to come to our big meeting, to the Areopagus. And he accepts the invitation and he goes there where all the smart people were. He goes and sits down with the smart people who have come up with all of these different religions. And as he's walking around, he has observed some things and he files it away because he's trying to figure out, how am I going to connect with these smart people who think they know everything there is to know about God? And he, after seeing one altar after another, one idol after another, he finally comes across not an idol, but an altar. And on the altar there, it was written these words, "To the unknown God." And Paul filed that in the back of his mind. When he got to the Areopagus, they handed him the mic. And on this particular day, Paul says, he starts this in verse number 22. And he found a way to connect with the people. He didn't want to insult them because he had something he wanted to teach them. But he did say to them, he connected with these words. He said, "You know, I've been walking around y'all's town and I see that y'all are real religious." He says, "It's evident that y'all are religious, and I've been observing the objects that y'all are worshiping. It's y'all real religious. They have gone from what they believe in private to putting what they believe in private. They've made it public, and they've given it a prominent place in their life." That's another sermon for another day. Write it down, Dwight. I ain't got time to preach it. I'll rewind and do it one more time. There's some things that they believed privately, but what they believed privately, they have now gone public with what they believe privately, and have given what they believed of importance a prominent place in their life. And they've made it public because ain't no shame in their game. And they don't care who sees and who watches. And they let everybody who comes by know this is who we worship, this is who we look to, this is who we believe in. And Paul says, "Y'all some real religious people. Y'all got your rules, you got your rituals, you got your repetition. Y'all are real religious." But it's interesting because the truth is that you can climb the ladder of success only to discover that you can have your building, your ladder leaning against the wrong building. I'm really afraid that there's some people that are trying to climb and get higher in life, but they got their ladder leaning against the wrong building. Some people said, "If I could just get that job, I could be happy and be successful. I could have joy and peace," only to discover, I don't care what job it is, even if it's pastoring the Nazarene Missionary Baptist Church, if you're looking for that to be the ultimate fulfillment in life, your ladder is leaning against the wrong building. Somebody said, it wasn't a job for me, it was a house. I said, if I could get that house in that subdivision, then I would truly be happy. And they got the house and they climbed and filled every room, only to discover that there was still something missing. Because if you're expecting a house, furniture, and fine linen to bring fulfillment in your heart, your ladder is leaning against the wrong building. I might as well go on there. We're going to be here a minute. Somebody said, if I could just get her to say yes, if I could just get him, if I could just get his attention, then he will complete me, only to discover that he made you completely crazy. Because if you depended upon a man or a woman to fulfill what only God can, your ladder is leaning against the wrong building. Let's be clear. Paul gets the mic and he begins to explain to them that it's evident, y'all got this God over here, then you got this one next to him, and then you got this one and this one and this one, and then after having all of them gods, you still aren't satisfied, and then you turned around and said, something's still missing. There must be a God that we don't know. Because it is the God of the universe that have created us for worship. And we're going to worship something. We're going to worship something. We're designed to worship. Some people worship sports. Some people worship beyond artists. Some people worship stuff and things. But none of those things can fulfill what only God can fulfill. Let us be clear. And so the people created an altar, and they said, this is to the unknown God. It's as if they were saying, we gonna have this one as a backup. And Paul said, I perceive that y'all are real religious. And y'all even got an altar to the unknown God. And Paul says, you're admitting that you don't even know this God. And then Paul says, that's the one I want to talk to you about. In verse number 24, it begins with these words, the God. And so one of the things I want Paul does as he begins to make things clear, he says to them, the God. I got to stop there. I got to put my parking brakes on, because he didn't say a God. There is a difference between using the word a God and the God. Sometimes I hear lyrics of songs in worship, and sometimes I want to change the lyrics. There's one song, I love it, it's a beautiful song, but I would so like to change the lyrics. One of the songs we sing says, you are a mighty God. And it's almost, I don't know who wrote the song. I don't know who wrote the artist. I've never had a conversation with them. But I, when they, with the choir, sometimes people sing, you are a mighty God. And then while they're saying that, I don't have the mic and I sing it the way I want to sing it. I say, you're the mighty God. Let me show you the difference. Outside, there is a gray Ford F-150. There's some Ford trucks outside. There's a gray Ford 150. And then Dwight has one. Yeah, his is a whole nother level. He has a black trimmed chrome creature, all kinds of creature comforts. It's another Ford truck. And then there's the one I drive. The one I drive. When I say the white F-150 parked by the curb, that makes a distinction between all the, there's some other trucks out there, but the truck, the one that I drive, makes a distinction. And what Paul is saying, y'all keep talking about all these gods, these little G-O-D-S's, but the God is the one I'm talking about. Here's where I want to outline this. Paul teaches them, number one, that the God, he's not one among many. You don't put him in a category with Zeus and all them other, no. Those are idols made by man. The God, the true and living God, he's God, and he's God all by himself. And then Paul says, let me tell you what he did. The first thing he did was he created the world. He is the one who, here it is, he's the one who made the world. He's the one who made something out of nothing. And people keep putting numbers on how old the world is, and they try to figure out where it came from. Did something bang? Well, created the something to bang? Something blow up. Well, who created that? And many individuals are arguing. I just like what the Bible says. In the beginning, God created. He spoke. And the world came into being. Not only did he is not one among many. He's the God who created the world. Here it is, number two. He's the one who created the contents. Not only creating the world is one thing, but everything in it he made. And he walked us through what he did. He divided light from darkness, rain from water, seawater from water in lakes and rivers, all the animals. He created the world. He created the contents of the world. He created man. He created the world. Then he took some dust that he made and made man. And then he took a man and made a woman. And then he took a man and a woman and made all the rest of us. He is the God who creates. He created the world. He creates the contents, which means he has the right to control what he makes. And that's why smart people don't want to talk about creation, because if he created it, then he has a right to control everything he creates. And there's some smart people that don't want to admit that he created the world, because if he created the world and the contents, that means he's responsible for creating them. And if he created them, then he has a right to tell you what. Paul is talking to smart people, and he says he created the world. He created the contents, which means he has a right to control what he made. Then Paul says, not only is he's not one among many, he doesn't need the creature to survive. This is what Paul said. Paul said, the God who created us don't need us to build him a temple to live in. He don't live in temples. He don't live in temples. It was men who said, this is the house of, they wanted to build God a house, but you can't fit God. You can't fit the God we serve in a temple. He's too big. Paul says, we need shelter, but the God we serve, he doesn't need shelter. He doesn't live in temples. And he doesn't need man's hands to sustain him. He's talking to smart people. Smart people who were made by God came up with a bright idea that there were some other gods, and so these smart people who were made in the image of God took their own hands to make an idol in their image and then turned around and worshiped the image that they made. Somebody ought to say, that sounds stupid to me. That sounds stupid to me. Here you are, created by God, but you don't have sense enough to worship the one you create. So, because you don't want to worship the one you create, because you got to worship him a certain kind of way, in spirit and in truth, you decide to make your own God and then sit him down and then worship something made by your hands. Anything made by your hands cannot sustain and do for you what the true and living God can. One time somebody was teasing, poking fun They say, I see him, but he don't, you speak to him. He's got a mouth, but he don't speak. You put ears on him, but he can't hear. He got eyes, but he can't see. I remember when they were on Mount Carmel and they were having the contest. Elijah said, holler a little louder. Maybe he's on a nap. Here they are worshiping these images that they made with their own hands. But then Paul says, no, here's what God does. Not only does he not need a temple, and he does not need man's hands to serve him so that he can be sustained, but he himself, the one who created us, he himself gives life and breath and everything else to what he has created. I love verse 26. It says, from one man he made all nations. From one man he made all nations. Here it is. Here it is. Number one, he is not one among many. He's the true and living God. Number two, he doesn't need the creature, us, to survive. And here's my last one. He made one man in his image. Now that's a marvelous text. I want to unpack that text for you, because by making one man in his own image, it helps us to understand the brotherhood of man. Don't ask me to figure out how one person's hair became curly and another one became straight. I don't know nothing about that. I can't explain the DNA why one person's hair is red and another person's brown. I don't understand how one person's eyes is green and another one's blue and another one's brown. But we all came from one man. We share a brotherhood. And if we don't remember anything else as we live in these perilous times, we need to be mindful of the fact that we are all created from one man. That makes us brothers. And every child, sooner or later, is going to have to give account to the father by how they treated their brother. You may not believe it, but I'll testify and tell the truth. I'm not proud of it, but there was a time, I'm 5 years, nearly 5 years older than my next sibling, and there's some more after them. And there were times where I was a bully because since I had to babysit and be in charge when mom and daddy was gone, I was wanting to make them do what mama told us we had to do before she got home. And if we didn't do what she said, you know what would happen. Sometimes there's a raising of the voice, sometimes there's a pop upside the head, sometimes there's a threat. That's the way she rolled, and that's the way I rolled. That's the way I rolled. I'm gonna try to make them do, because I was the one who was in charge and took on the role sometimes of a bully. And then word got out that I was overstepping my bounds. And I had a meeting one day with the father. And he explained to me, and I came out of the room crystal clear, that I was a brother and not a father. And I had a level of responsibility, but it only went so far. Because the truth is, when we come to understand that we are brothers, there's a humanity that we ought to share and realize and embrace. Paul emphasizes the brotherhood of man. And because we're made in the image of God, here's what else God did. God appointed a time. There is an appointed time in history. I chuckle all the time because my wife, she celebrates the fact. She said, I'm so glad I was born in the time I was born in. The idea of hauling water to take a bath, hauling water, two dishes, the idea of hauling water to do laundry. She said, oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad God waited till there were some amenities to allow me to be born in this day. But listen to what Paul says. Paul says, out of one nation, he made all men. And that expresses the brotherhood of men. And every man has an appointed time. God has ordained when we would arrive. And God has ordained when we live, when we leave. Question is, it's every now and then when you go through the cemetery, you'll see some interesting things when you go through the cemetery. You'll see on most tombstones, you'll see a name. And usually there's something reflective of that person, blood, brother, husband, father, mother, all of that kind of stuff. But then you'll see two important numbers. You'll see one number that's on the left that's always smaller than the number on the right. The number on the left gives the date that they were born. The number on the right gives the date that they left this world. And every now and then you'll see another set of numbers where the person has the name, the person has a number on the left, and they don't have a number on the right. That's all because they haven't died yet, but when they do die, it's already been declared, put me right here. I can't do nothing about the number I showed up December 8th, 1959. I didn't have nothing to do about that. And that other number, I don't know what that number is going to be. But the truth is, God has ordained for all of us an appointed time. Matter of fact, Paul goes a step further. He says, not only has God ordained an appointed time, but God's put boundaries. God has, I like this word. There's a word that says marked out. Means that like an architect, God has marked out where we would start, where we would stop, and he's marked out how far we could go. And see, that's why you can live in times like this. You can live through a pandemic, and you can live through what seems to be unusual and unhealthy leadership at the highest level, because God has appointed. Go on, cuss if you want to. You should have went and voted. And if you don't go vote, you're going to be cussing again. But here's what you need to know. God has appointed. People don't like to hear this, but God has sovereignly arranged for the world to experience what we have in D.C. God has appointed it. Not only has he appointed it, and here's what I like, he puts boundaries on how far he can go. He can say whatever he want to say, but he's not God. He might have some houses and land, some golf courses here and there, but he does not have power over God. And before his mama knew his daddy, God had already marked out when he would show up. So quit acting like, I know what it is, either you haven't read it or you read it and don't believe it. But the God we serve, he is in complete control. He says, he made one man out of his image, that's the brotherhood. Thank God he puts boundaries on how far folk can go. But then the final thing I want to share with you, not only did God do this because he wants to remind us that we're brothers, that we're family. He puts boundaries on how far we can go. But he does this because there's a blessing he's given to man. Don't miss it. In this last verse that I read, God did this, verse number 27, so that we would seek him, perhaps reach out to him and find him. God did this on purpose. Then Paul said, there are three verbs I need to give you why he did it. So that you'd seek him, reach out to him, and find him. He's talking to smart people. There will come a time in all of our lives where you're going to experience something that you can't handle. And everybody got somebody that they think can handle anything. It might be Big Mama. It might be an uncle. It might be an aunt. And most folk got somebody they run to as a refuge. Most folk got somebody they run to when their back gets up against the wall. Most folk got somebody they run to when they need a bailout. But there's going to come a time you're going to have an experience, a situation, a circumstance where even Big Mama can't bail you out. When even Grandpa can't bail you out. Some of y'all been cute a long time, and all you had to do was exercise your assets. Catch that one in the parking lot to get what you want. But there's going to come a time your assets ain't gonna get it. And Paul told him that God fixes it. Bless his holy name. God fixes life so that every now and then you don't have nobody to turn to but him. Listen to it. He did it so that there'll come a time in your mind you'll say, I need him. But saying you need him is one thing. What you gonna do about it? Needing him is one thing, but reaching for him is something else. That's why. Let me help you. You're in your seat and you're saying the right words. I need the Lord. But what are you going to do about what you said? Listen to what Paul said. You can need him, but then you got to reach for him. Have I got a witness here? Reach for him and you'll find him. In the word of God, you'll find him in prayer. You'll find him in worship. Have I got a witness here? You need to say and believe, I need him. I'm going to reach for him. Now, this is an interesting word. This word here, when Paul uses this word reach for him, it means to grope. It means to grope. What that really means is, I don't really know where he is, but I'm reaching. Have I got a witness here? It's like the blind man. When Jesus was walking by, he didn't know how close he was, but he said, Jesus, have mercy on me. Hey, I can do it like this. When I was a little boy, we used to play a game called Blind Man's Bluff. It went something like this. Somebody would take a sock, a tube sock, hopefully a clean one, and tie it around your eyes. And then they'd spin you all around till you got dizzy. And then the goal was, when you stopped spitting, it was your job to try to find and catch the individuals. And then the last one to get caught, they won the game. Here it is. When you can't see your way, when things get difficult, dizzy, when you lose your equilibrium and you feel drunk, about to fall, the Lord said, seek me, reach for me. Hey, I thank the Lord that while you're reaching for him, guess what? He's reaching for you. And he's so big, you don't have to go far to bump into him. He's a big God. Hey, if you get in the word, you'll bump into him. If you call his name, you'll bump into him. He ain't hiding. He's waiting on you to need him, to seek him, to reach for him. That's what he did when he sent Jesus. It was God reaching down to give us a Savior. When Jesus got on Calvary, it was Jesus, one hand reaching up to God, another hand reaching down to man, so that we could be connected. It ain't about religion. Be clear. You can have rules, rituals, repetition, but this thing ain't about religion. This thing ain't about real estate. It ain't about 867 East Walnut Street. It ain't about Line Street. It's all about relationship. Hey, when you can't get to 867, you still can get to God right where you are. Kurt, you can get to God. Chandler, you can get to God. Eagle Way, you can get to God. When you can't get to the church, you can still get to God. Let's be clear. He sent his son. Let's be clear. Jesus died that we might live. Let's be clear. He rose from the dead with all power in his hands. And let's be clear. He's coming back. He's coming back. He's coming back. He's coming back again. He's not looking for alphas or kappas, Q's or deltas. He's looking for people who've been born again. I've been born again.